Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this last day of 2008, December 31st. This hour of the program, perhaps you saw this op-ed piece in the New York Times on December 28. It certainly caught our attention, titled, Should the Obama Generation Drop Out? Charles Murray wrote the piece, and he says that this is a suggested battle cry that Mr. Obama should use to undermine the bachelor's degree as a job qualification. He should use this as a rallying cry to be repeated in every speech on the subject. It's what you can do that should count when you apply for a job and not where you learned it. The residential college leading to a bachelor's degree at the end of 4 years works fine for the children of parents who have plenty of money, works fine for top students from all backgrounds who are drawn toward academics, but most 18-year-olds are not from families with plenty of money, not top students, and not drawn toward academics. They want to learn how to get a satisfying job that also pays well. Professor Charles Murray is W.H. Brady Scholar at the American Enterprise Institute for Public Policy Research. And he is also author of a new book, Real Education, Four Simple Truths for Bringing America's Schools Back to Reality. We're going to be welcoming phone calls for him. I would imagine we'll get a lot of calls on this subject. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655 for you to join our conversation. Rob Schroeder answering phones here in our new Milwaukee studios, so call us and join the conversation whenever you would like. Professor Charles Murray, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Kathleen.
So the rallying cry, let's start. It's what you can do that should count when you apply for a job, not where you learn to do it.
That's right. It's you know, I really disliked the title that the New York Times gave to it, Should the Obama Generation Drop Out? This is not some pessimistic article about saying, well, college is only for the privileged few. It's saying, look, it's about time we level the playing field and stop making kids jump through hoops in order to get a shot at a job interview when the BA really doesn't mean very much anymore.
Does the BA mean something if you go to a really top-notch school?
Nah, no, not really. I mean, I went to Harvard, and I graduated with my degree in Russian history. And I want to tell you, the fact that I had a degree in Russian history from Harvard would tell an employer very little, except that I was able to get into Harvard. You know, that's okay. That's relevant to an employer's thinking, but not anything that I had learned there.
I think you say someplace in one of your articles that it would mean something that you got in there, but in terms of once you get in, if you're studying English literature or whatever, it's not that hard.
Actually anything except the hard sciences. Now you be a physics major at Harvard, and you have chosen a tough road to hoe. But everything else, Harvard hates to admit that it made a mistake by admitting you, and so getting through is not a big deal.
Why is it that we have this model, and it's becoming more and more the model, that in order to get anywhere in almost any profession, you have to have this degree? Otherwise, you don't go anywhere in American society.
It's become a kind of convenient screen, Kathleen, so that you have applicants for a job. And if you require the BA, you do have evidence of a certain amount of perseverance and a certain amount of ability. You don't know much more than that unless you go deep into the transcript and look carefully at where the kid went to school. But it is a convenient screen. And since you have so many youngsters who do go to college now, about 50% of all new high school graduates go to a four-year institution. They don't get through necessarily, but they go. Since there are so many, the employer doesn't really need to worry that there's this large pool of talent he's not tapping, because so many of the most talented kids do, in fact, go to college.
Mm-hmm. What should be the job qualification?
All depends on what the job is. I mean, there are a great many jobs where, indeed, they do hire young trainees for a corporation that have a degree in Renaissance history or whatever, and they figure, well, that they want somebody who's smart and is adaptable and can learn and can write. My point is, well, why not give a chance to a youngster who's taken online courses to demonstrate the same thing? Instead of having the BA, how about if you want them to be able to write? Well, ask them for a writing sample. Mm. I mean, I'm simplifying now, mm-hmm. but there ought to be a way that you can give young people a chance to show what they can do.
Mm-hmm. You talk about these certification tests. Do we have any of those in existence now that could be a model?
Oh, lots. That's the good point. I guess for your listeners, I should elaborate a little bit.
Sure.
I argue that we could use certifications in all kinds of fields in place of the bachelor's degree. The model is the CPA exam. It's known all over the country. Everybody who hires certified public accountants knows that exam. It's a very rigorous, thorough exam. It takes 14 hours in 3 different sessions, so you really do get a handle on what they know about accounting. And if you walk into a job interview with a really top CPA score, but you took courses at an online institution, well, that employer is going to take you seriously competing with a person with a lower CPA score who went to a recognized school. And that's what I want.
Mm-hmm. What about the idea that if you study philosophy and English and get a smattering, if you're an English kind of major, of science and biology, that you're a well-rounded person, you're able to understand the world, you're able to move forward in the world because you know a lot about different parts of the world?
Well, here's where you've got to hold two thoughts in your mind at the same time, and I certainly do. I love a classical liberal education. I think it's wonderful. I think everybody who can be induced to get a classical liberal education should do so. And that means, to me, learning the best that the human species has created. It means learning rigor in verbal expression and thinking and all the other kinds of things that you referenced. But that's not what undergraduate college does these days, except for a handful of colleges and a handful of students. So let's stop kidding ourselves. If we had a system now where to get into an undergraduate school or to get a BA, you had to complete a rigorous set of core requirements in a classical liberal education, I would be talking completely differently than the way I'm talking now.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about this movement? We did a show on this a couple weeks ago of the number of students from usually pretty ritzy secondary schools who are going to European schools now because of their philosophy being quite different. If you didn't score very well on your math SATs and you have no desire to become a mathematician or a scientist, that's okay because you're going to be writing novels or you're going to be teaching English at the secondary level. So why even go that route?
You're talking about a phenomenon that I actually haven't read much about. It sounds very interesting to me. The fact is that you can get into really good schools these days if you have first-rate verbal skills, but you have second-rate
right.
math skills. And once you get in there, you don't have to take any
right.
courses that require any math. So even in American colleges, there's really very little requirement for you to be good at both of them. But
mm-hmm.
as I say, I'm not familiar with the phenomenon you just described.
Yeah. You've also written about the fact that it should take us a much shorter period of time to study our field, that maybe college should be, am I wrong in saying 1 year or maybe 2 years?
Well, learning what you need to know should be 1 year or 2 years. Yeah, my point here is there is no occupation in the world, including brain surgeon, it requires 4 years of courses, of coursework. It certainly requires more than 4 years of time, but not 4 years of coursework. Now go from brain surgery to something like somebody who wants to go into business. I think it's perfectly reasonable for an employer to want a new applicant to know something about marketing and something about business administration and some of the other technical aspects of business. Perfectly reasonable. Not 4 years worth of courses. How many years will those courses take? I don't know, but I would imagine that bearing on the field, it would usually be between 1 and 3 years. And if you have students who want to go into business, that's their passion, they want to do it, don't make them stay for 4 years to get the BA. And the reason I say that, again, is let's stop thinking in terms of children from families with enough money to pay the tuition. And think of terms of all the kids for whom piling up that student debt is a real problem and who shouldn't have to be required to do it.
And it is a real problem. You're so right about that. There are so many people, young people I know, who are working many jobs to pay off that debt.
That's right. And by the way, a lot of them are paying it off after having not gotten a BA, because we have told them in high school, we've told them from day one, you got to get that BA to be a first-class citizen in this country and get the good jobs. And so we have gotten lots and lots of kids who are not suited for the traditional four-year university to try their darndest to get that degree, and they've end up in the hole because of it, and we have done them a disservice.
Hmm. If there isn't 4 years of coursework for almost all professions, why is there 4 years of coursework then?
Yeah, that we require them. Well, let's go back to the point about a liberal education. If you are getting a classic liberal education, 4 years is a very reasonable amount of time, because it's going to take 4 years of coursework to learn the basic survey courses in history and philosophy and literature and a foreign language and some courses at in the sciences as well at a survey level. That's going to take 4 years of coursework. It has nothing to do with learning a profession. And that's the distinction. For the classic liberal education, the traditional model is fine. That's what the traditional model was developed for. But now it's being used for a completely different purpose that it was not designed for, and we've got to loosen that straitjacket.
Mm-hmm. Let's welcome phone calls. We'll take them in a moment. Our lines are getting filled here, as I expected they would. Professor Charles Murray is our guest, and we're talking about four-year colleges. He writes in a recent piece in the New York Times, Barack Obama has two attractive ideas for improving post-secondary education, expanding the use of community college and tuition tax credits, but he needs to hitch them to a broader platform, and the broader platform is whether or not we need a bachelor's degree as a job qualification. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And two lines are open right now. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to your phone calls now, and we start them with Roger from Stevens Point. Hi, Roger.
Good morning, Kathleen. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning.
Professor, I applaud you for bringing up this subject. I'm a 47-year-old non-traditional student right now, and I'm going for my BA and on to my master's. My question for you, and I'll take my answers off the air, one is, do you feel that the BA is causing potential employers to overlook the job pool that we have currently in America? I mean, do they just look for the BA, and are they just not taking into consideration what maybe an older person would have to bring to the market? And the other one is, do you think a basic overhaul of the degree of the general degree requirements? I mean, we're taking so many courses that don't relate to the fields that we're going to. I mean, we're taking natural resources, we're taking poetry, we're taking everything else, and, you know, we're going on for public administration where we could be committing that time to what we really want to study. I just wonder what your thoughts on that were. Thank you.
Thanks, Roger.
You've got two issues in a person in your situation when you're 47 years old, which is that some employers will say, gee, I want to get a 23-year-old kid and train them as opposed to take on a midlife person. That's another issue. But the question about whether employers do require the BA when they don't need to, the answer is emphatically yes. Let's go to the case of a huge number of corporations in this country that hire all kinds of businesses, whether they manufacture widgets or whether they are consulting firms or you name it. They almost all require the BA if you're going into the management track, when they know very well that almost all of the technical training for what the technical aspects of the job they're hiring for is something they're going to have to do themselves. And it will be done in the old-fashioned way through an apprenticeship. Sometimes they will have 10 weeks of courses within the corporation where they teach things, and then they go into apprentice kinds of jobs. But they are not saying we've got to have the BA because something that the applicant brings to the job learned that they could only have learned through a BA. That's not it. It's a screen whereby they say this person probably has the raw intellectual and personal abilities we're looking for. They are not inaccurate in saying that that's the case, But the reason that they have so many people that meet those needs out of the BA population is because so many kids know that they've got to have the BA to get their foot in the door. It has nothing to do with the content of the BA. It has to do with its symbolism.
Thanks, Roger, for the call. Karen from Platteville is next. Hi, Karen.
Hi, I want to say this is the first time I've ever agreed with someone from your institute. And that is...
Life brings new surprises every day.
And that is because what happened to me, where I went to, after my junior year in high school, I went to live with my uncles, and we had to move every 3 to 6 weeks because we were surveying the interstate highway system for the federal government with the Coast and Geodetic Survey, which is now NOAA. So I would change high schools. And then I started on my fifth year because you had to have a degree. Well, you know, the light bulb finally went on, and I thought, well, I'll be 90 years old and still going to high school.
Karen.
So I applied to a college where my uncle had a home. His wife had died, and so they had rented it out. And I was accepted without a high school degree at the winter quarter. And then I graduated in 3.5 years, and my daughter did it in 3.
Hmm. Yeah. And you took extra heavy course loads and the rest of it to do that.
Well, one summer.
Yeah, yeah. Are you glad that you got the degree? And did you have something specific in mind you wanted to learn to be when you went to college?
Well, mostly the foreign service. But then at that time, you had to know a foreign language. Well, now you don't. So, you know, English being kind of like the universal language, although it helps to have Chinese these days, I imagine.
In your case, you got into college without the high school diploma.
Correct.
And actually, the colleges are better about that than employers are about hiring people without a BA. Because if, in fact, you can pass out of a variety of college requirements with honors placement tests, and if you have high enough SATs or ACTs, you'll have a lot of colleges that will take you without the high school diploma. In a way, I want corporations to behave more like colleges do in that regard.
What did you wind up doing, Karen?
Well, about every 5 years, I change occupations. I was in the Air Force. I was served during the Vietnam War.
Uh-huh.
And then City Council in Pismo Beach, California, and home care. And then I was a dairy farmer in Wisconsin.
Oh, my gosh, Karen.
You know, and then on and on.
Right. A good life, a varied life.
Well, the only problem being that we don't want to solve the two major problems, which is aging and finding another planet that we can live on and outside the solar system and how to get there.
Okay, thanks very much for the call. We had guests on yesterday who are doing just that, actually. Our number is 800-486-8655. Let me ask you to answer this question that you ask in one of your pieces. Perhaps the easiest way, you say, to introduce this argument is to ask you, and I'm asking you, Professor Murray, to imagine that you've been made a member of a task force to design America's post-secondary education system from scratch.
Mm-hmm. And and then I go on to say, well, suppose a fellow member of that task force came to you and said, hey, I've got an idea. Let's establish a single measure of educational success, and let's make it require 4 years no matter what's being learned, and let's have it so that it has very little to do with what you actually need to know in the job and attach an important economic premium to it, and then let's make it something that actually only a minority of students can get in terms of their own gifts, and we'll punish everybody who doesn't. What would you think, I ask, in the book, of a person who came up with a plan like that? You'd think he was crazy and very cruel. Mm-hmm. And that is what I've just described is actually the system we have in place with the BA.
Mm-hmm. Let's go next to Earl from Milwaukee. Hi, Earl.
Hello, yes. My question and my comment is simply, why is it that... It seems as though the education system is geared more towards people who have resources and, like, no inspiration to actually fulfill their educational drive. And I mean, if you go to college, you go to any university, you'll find it's riddled with people who but I don't really care about education or the community or things that, you know, that would benefit the environment of education. And it's like, I guess my question is, where has our education been heading all along? Is like, has it been to serve this corporate, this corporate agenda, or is there any sort of humanistic, humanistic drive to better the world?
You know, I think actually a lot of the blame falls on the parents, and I include myself in that indictment. If you think about it, it's parents, as much as anyone else, who are telling their children from very early on that you've got to get a BA. To some extent, they're accurate in saying that's the way the world works right now, but they carry it to an extreme. And so when you have a child who comes to them and says, you know, I really love woodworking. I'm good at it, and I love it, and I want to do that instead of go get a college degree. A lot of times you have parents who are really unhappy about that and really push them into that college. And then once they get into college, an awful lot of parents do not pay much attention to what their children are actually doing there. And if their children are taking gut courses, really easy courses, if they are wasting their time, if they're going out drinking all the time, but they're making enough progress that they're going to get their BA eventually, you have an awful lot of parents who think that's okay. They might not prefer it that way, but they aren't going to do anything to change it. And you have a lot of parents who have a lot of money. And so they are not requiring their children to help pay for their own education. And guess what? You get lots of kids who are on colleges, campuses, just because mom and dad are paying for it, and it's a lot of fun and not much work. There's something wrong with that, you know? There's something wrong with that insofar, especially as those students have a huge advantage over other students who don't have those kinds of things going for them.
Thanks, Earl, so much for your call. Let's go to Devin next from Stevens Point. Hi, Devin.
Hi. Thanks. I agree with your main point in your article I read yesterday about eliminating the bachelor as a requirement for employment. But I'm wondering, I'd like to hear your comments on the idea of simply cultivating a life of the mind in critical thinking. You mentioned that the bachelor symbolizes the raw intellectual abilities that employers are looking for. And I think it's more about opportunity as opposed to inducing students to get this kind of education. So I kind of take issue with your arguing that many Americans don't have the desire to receive this classical education, but it's more about having the opportunity and being set up for a place where you can actually go to a liberal arts college and actually receive a liberal arts degree. And it seems like that's something we'd want to aspire to more than just vocational training.
Well, you know, what you're suggesting is an empirical thing that we could get together and compare data on how many kids go to college and want a classical liberal education. I'll just simply say that if you talk to college professors, such students do, in fact, exist. And they really do want what colleges were designed to teach in a liberal education. And I think that any professor will tell you an awful lot of kids don't. And it's not that they've never thought about it. It's not that they, if you tell them, gee, look, if you take a course in the 19th century English novel, maybe you'll really like it. Why don't you do that? It's not that they'll say, gee, it never crossed my mind. No, a lot of them have tried that kind of thing in high school or maybe at the beginning of their college career. And they say, you know, I don't particularly enjoy that. That's not what I want. What the exact proportions are of students who do, who are and are not open to that kind of classical liberal education are, I can't cite. But let me say this. In many ways, acquiring a classic liberal education is kind of an odd way to spend one's time. it requires you to read books that are difficult, and then it requires you to write papers analyzing them.
Right.
And some people, you know, for some people that's fun. For me it was fun. But it's not natural. It's not normal, and it's certainly not. There's nothing inherently superior about that way of looking at the world than the youngster says, you know what, I'd like to take some courses in marketing and some courses in accounting, and I'd like to get out and get a job. You know, that's fine.
But what are you going to do at 5 o'clock? Aren't you going to read classic literature?
Well, I would like to ask how many BAs in our listening audience at 5 o'clock pull out their copy of Proust, huh? I mean, let's get serious. Now, I said earlier, I think a classic liberal education is terrific. But you know what? I think you're going to have just as good a chance of triggering interest in these other things if you have a college system which does not have the kind of Mickey Mouse distribution requirements that most colleges have now. I mean, Kathleen, the way it is right now, you have distribution requirements. Okay, so the kid who wants to take marketing courses and accounting courses, he has to take a fulfillment of the humanities requirement.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do a lot of these kids do? They go through the course catalog, and you have a bunch of courses that will fulfill it. And one of them is the epic poem from Homer to Milton, let's say, and the other one is the epic film from Ben-Hur to Lord of the Rings. And I assure you that they end up taking the epic film from Ben-Hur to the Lord of the Rings. If you didn't have those distribution requirements, I think you would have, if anything, an even better chance that somebody who's in a college campus taking the vocational courses he wants might take a look at a course on Homer and take it out of curiosity than they do under the current system where they game the distribution system.
Thanks, Devin, for the call. Here's an email. Why not suggest that employers offer an intelligence test in lieu of a BS or BA? For every 10 points their IQ is above average, why not count it as a year in college?
Well, you know, I have written on IQ rather extensively. I was co-author of The Bell Curve, which got me in a lot of trouble some years ago. And I actually have gotten increasingly down on kids who are really, really smart and coast on that.
Hmm.
And there are such that nobody earns their IQ. It's a pure gift.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the case that employers value... Is it good to have kids who are really smart? Can you train them more easily, et cetera? Yeah, you can, other things being equal. But I don't want a test that focuses on that. Any test, any certification test, will pick up a rough measure of intelligence along with the other information. But I want employers to actually be more directly asking, does this youngster bring to the job both the personal qualities and the knowledges that I need? Not specifically what his IQ is.
Mm-hmm. Let's go next to, where are we? Carl is next from Evansville. Hi, Carl.
Hi there, Kathleen. This is, Carl. Just calling. Thank you, Professor, for coming on the air. I think this is a great topic. I am a recent college graduate, but I focused a lot of my time in my university on the other aspect of college life that I think is missing in this discussion, and that's the opposite of academic education, but it's your student life and development. It's the going through college to really try and find your identity, join clubs that you need to join, to have a camaraderie, to allow yourselves to find individuals that are like you to help build up who you are as a person. And I just really feel like if we do talk about reform, which it definitely is needed in higher education, you need to focus also on that aspect. If we do just give 1 to 3 years of an education, focusing specifically on whatever it is that they're interested in, you really miss out on that other aspect that the American education can give you. I spent a year in Taiwan, and I think that I prided myself as being an American that can think analytically, that can communicate with others at a higher level than individuals from other universities around the world. And I just think that that's a very important part that I'd like to be more discussed, I guess. But thank you for having this topic.
Sure, thanks. Thanks, Carl.
Fair enough to say that college can serve that function that you just described. It certainly can. It can also, or it should be able to serve a maturing function. But let me offer another way of looking at what's been going on in colleges. In many ways, college used to be kind of a halfway house for adulthood, where you did go out and you learned to deal with new kinds of people, you learned to live on your own, you learned to take responsibility for your actions in a way you didn't have to do as a child, and it prepared you for the kind of world you were going to enter after you left. In many ways, campus life today has become more of a way to prolong adolescence than to midwife the kind of maturity that you experienced when you were in college. And by that, I mean you now have res life staff in universities which hover over students in ways that they never did 30, 40 years ago. You have the professors who these days will, you had to turn the paper in late, I guess I understand, or you have to postpone the test, I understand, and when they would not have been so understanding before. You do have some campuses where the social life does not consist of getting to know new people. It consists of a lot of drinking and not much interesting going on. My wife used to teach at Rutgers University, and she used to teach English literature there. So she was not teaching a vocational style course, but she used to talk about the way that the students who had come to university after a hitch in the military, or after just working for some years, were so much more mature and took so much more away from her course than those who come straight from high school and college life was all they'd ever known. You know what? It's quite possible that the same maturing processes you just talked about would have been just as rich and as rewarding or more rewarding if you joined the Army or if you'd gotten a job someplace and supported yourself for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
Could have been.
And would it make a difference what kind of job? Because it seems to me as though it's hard to do that. It's hard in this society to go, and I think that's a good idea for many people, to go from high school to the world of work and then maybe to college. But where do you go?
Well, you can get all sorts of jobs that are, you know, low-level, low-skill work out of high school, even if you haven't taken a vocational training at all. Other people will have vocational skills they can take into it. But these jobs, you can learn a lot. And I speak as someone for whom, when I worked as a busboy during college, during the summers and as a way to make some money and so forth, those experiences were just as valuable to me as any course at Harvard I took in many ways, first because I really did learn to deal with people I would not have learned to deal with otherwise. I also learned the ways in which any kind of job can have its own definition of being done well or poorly. The value of working as a young person, I think, is incalculable, and it's independent, I think, of how menial or how intrinsically stimulating the job might be. I feel so strongly about that that my children, the joke around the Murray household is that Dad's idea of the perfect summer job is to cook burgers by day and clean toilets by night. I think that that's missing from the lives of way too many, especially privileged young people today.
Paul is next from Madison. Hi, Paul.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm a retired university-level counselor, and I saw over the course of my career there's a maturation process that goes on in the four-year college that is really very striking when one pays attention. There's a very great difference between the typical freshman and the typical senior. By the time people get to be seniors in a typical college nowadays, I was at a state university, they have learned a few things. They've learned to communicate effectively, both by what they can hear and what they can read, and also how to feed that back in coherent sentences, which a lot of freshmen can't do. They've had a lot of other experiences, both social and occupational, typically in their summers. And regardless of the major that they've had, they've learned somewhat, to some degree, to take responsibility for a task, apply themselves, and produce a product on deadline for a professor. Now, there's a lot of argument as to whether professors today are more lenient than they were in the past, or whether students are coddled today. Frankly, I don't think they were. I date back to the time of house mothers. So I sense that there is a very valuable maturation process that occurs typically in a four-year education that employers can count on as a person who they can hire. Of course, they're going to be an interview first, but they can hire somebody who they have reasonably good reason to suppose can be given a task, can be given a project, can be and be relied on without supervision to follow through, do what was asked, and come up with an answer. And that, I think, is the is a value to an employer as much as it is a value to the individual that produces a much more productive environment, both for the company and for the person.
Well, sir, the points you raise really get to the heart, I think, of the conversation that needs to go on, insofar as what you were describing is the typical college student. And heaven knows you bring experience to this conversation that I don't. But I can also tell you of lots of employers who talk about today's college students that they get in bemused terms that are very different from the description you just gave. So that the new graduate comes in, they are given an assignment, and their view is that it's sort of optional as to whether they do it the way that they were told to do it and when they were told to do it, that and are a little hurt and indignant when the employer gets upset when it's not done as expected on time. And who's right? This is what I mean. We have to figure it out empirically. My sense is a very large proportion and a growing proportion of college students do not fit the description you just gave and instead come out of college not with the kind of maturity that used to be expected of college graduates. But I don't think we can resolve who's right about this one in the course of this hour.
Thank you so much, Paul, for your call. Our guest this hour is Professor Charles Murray. He's H.W. Brady Scholar at the American Enterprise Institute and the author of a number of books, including most recently Real Education, Four Simple Truths for Bringing America's Schools Back to Reality, and caught our attention most recently, was it December 28th? December 28th, New York Times article in which he looks at the value, of a bachelor's degree and questions whether or not we need to re-examine that whole system. We have one line open. It's been a popular hour, so I'd take it now. 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's an email sent to us, Professor Murray, from Eau Claire, Jill in Eau Claire. We need to keep in mind that college is connected to health care. I have a high school senior who would love to try some things other than college next year, but it all boils down to health care. If he goes to college, he's covered by our health care. If he chooses to try his hand at making a living by his skill, he has no health care.
That's an interesting observation. Mm-hmm. I bet she's right. I'm sure she's right that it's all at once they aren't covered if they go off on their own. A couple of thoughts. I think that if you are going to define how you behave at 18 or 19 years old in terms of being covered by health care, you are a little too risk averse. 18, 19 years old, your chances of being able to get along without health care seems to me are good enough that you ought to make your decisions about what you ought to do other than that as being the criterion. But the degree of risk averseness, I guess, varies among us all.
We go next to Mike from Appleton. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, good morning. Very interesting hour, Professor. Thank you. couple of comments from my perspective. I had a very privileged life. In my high school years, I went to a private school, went to the university, and was kicked out because of scholastic deficiency. In other words, I was dreaming. I had no business being there. So then I went into the Army for a couple of years, and that woke me up. And I never went back to college. I've been very successful. I'm self-made. I have my own business. And in the course of all of my career, I've interviewed and hired probably hundreds of people. And I've been astonished at the very, very low level of ability that is coming out with college students. I mean, quite frankly, some of them are borderline morons. Now, I have two young kids, and I'm helping them chart their course. And I'm saying to them, you have to go to college, you have to get a degree, because that's the way the world is structured. However, you're also going to get a degree in some vocational field, be a plumber, carpenter, painter, whatever, something that you can fall back on. And as part of the suggestion that I'm giving to them, I'm saying once you're done with high school and after you've worked, you know, during the summers, you're going to go overseas for a year to see what the world is about, and then I think you're going to be ready for college.
Fascinating. Now we're going to be just two dads reminiscing with each other. I would like to point out, I'm really glad you called, because the gentleman who called a few minutes ago, who was a retired a counselor at the university, certainly had a very powerful statement of the virtues of college. Well done. And I'm glad to hear somebody saying, yeah, but a lot of the college graduates don't look that way. I think both you and he have valid points to be made there. As for children, I've had four children. All right, and I've encouraged all of them not to go directly to college. I had three out of four failures in that regard, and only one delayed for a year. But the other thing was that if you can't get them to take time off between high school and college, I say to them, whatever you do, don't go directly to graduate school. Buy a one-way air ticket to someplace interesting. Take $500, $700, $1,000 with you, maybe enough to keep body and soul together until you get a job. Get off the plane, get a job, live in that culture, just as you suggested. Go out and, you know, go out and find out what the world is like. But by the way, not on daddy's nickel. You've got to support yourself while you're doing it. And three out of the four who finished college, well, all three who finished college took that advice, and I think have been the better for it. Of course, the problem is that sometimes they never come home again, but at least they've gotten out into the world.
Is that what happened? They stayed? And your family?
I have one child in Bologna, one child in Cambodia, and one child in Bangkok.
Oh, my gosh.
My wife is beginning to install a rule that says one child must remain in the Western Hemisphere at all times.
Oh, isn't that something? They stayed.
Yeah, but the gentleman, our caller's point, I think, is absolutely valid that... Mm-hmm. And his own experience confirms the validity of that. When he went to college, and it wasn't the right thing for him.
Right. Thanks for the call. June is next from Shawano. Hi, June.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, June.
Hello, Professor. My basic thoughts are similar to yours, and my experience sort of is like the way you want your children to live. I have a son who. Was a carpenter. He, in the year he was supposed to go to college, got a summer job and fell in love with the work. He worked at it for a long time, rose in the field, and was doing very well when he had a spinal injury and had surgery. And I suggested, somewhat against his grain, that he should go to school. So he went to the technical college in Green Bay. Wisconsin has a very fine technical college, 2-year, and I was very impressed with the courses he took, the physics and the math and the drafting, which is done on a computer and is quite complex. He graduated with honors and tried to get a job, but even though he was picked up by the personnel department as highly rated, the interviewers were not interested in him because he didn't have a degree, 4-year degree. Oh. He had certifications and everything. So he's struggling in this particular field right now because of the housing situation and because of the government situation. But I'm not disappointed about his schooling, and I'm sure he will achieve in the future.
Yes, but you are making exactly my case. It is close to criminal that he doesn't have a way to compete with other people in this field based on what he's able to do, not whether he has a four-year degree or not. It's just wrong from everybody's perspective. And that's what we've got to... That's the whole point of my editorial.
Mm-hmm. That's why I called.
Thank you very
thanks,
much.
Thanks, June. Thanks very much for your call. We go next to Terry from Stevens Point. Hi, Terry.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I agree with many of the things your guest and some of the callers have said. I work at a college, and I see a lot of college students that really shouldn't be there. They really don't want to learn. They're there because their parents are paying for it. They want grades because... of time served in the classroom. They want to be able to pass courses with extra credit. It's really kind of disturbing what the trend is that I've seen over the last 10 years of college teaching. I think a better solution would be to increase the academic standards needed to get into college, but make it more affordable for those that really want to get in, perhaps through a service program. I agree a college degree shouldn't be a barrier to talented people, but I'm really concerned about what I see is a trend in the dumbing down of America, that everyone should be the same. You know, everyone should be treated equally. And if you are smart, if you do have the ability to apply yourself and get a college education, that is looked down upon in this society. And I'm also troubled with the fact that you're only using business and marketing as an example. Even if a person wants to go into business, there's a lot of courses they may take that they may not realize the value of until after they've had them. You know, things like natural resources, biology. I mean, how are we going to have an educated electorate if they don't understand issues of global warming and stem cell research and how our political system works? And so, you know, I think people do have to, you know, look outside of just taking the courses that they want. But my main point is I'm really concerned about the dumbing down of America. And if you devalue the value of a bachelor's degree, that, you know, we're going to end up with people that don't understand the important issues of our time. And I'll take my answer off.
All right. Thanks very much for the call.
Yeah, we could do another 3 hours
yes.
on the points that this caller just made. They're all very interesting. To go to the first one real quickly about the ability issue, which we haven't talked about. Traditional college-level material, I mean genuine college-level material, is intellectually difficult. And I guess I'd ask my listeners who have old college textbooks around to go look at them again and just remember that this text is not something that every kid can absorb. And if it's in the sciences and math, forget it. You know, I couldn't have finished a major in physics or engineering, I don't think. I don't think I could have gotten graduated because that's not where my strengths lie. So all of us are too dumb to complete college in a bunch of majors. And it's perfectly appropriate and needed to once again say college has a particular kind of set of demands in the same way that anything else does, and you have to be able to meet those demands to do the work. She also raised the point you want an educated electorate and you want them to be aware of a whole bunch of other issues besides those involved in their jobs. And I agree with that, and that opens up a whole new issue where I say, boy, could we be doing a better job of that in high school.
Mm.
Because that's where we have everybody, or close to everybody, for educational experiences. And right now, I think the curriculum in K-12 is pathetic, and we could be doing much more than we are now. That's very short answers to very complicated questions she posed.
And that will be a future show. That'll be fun to talk to you about secondary education. Mike from Milwaukee, hi.
Hi, I vehemently disagree with you. And the reason is, of course, is because basically colleges should not be interested in becoming vocational schools. If you want to resurrect vocational schools, fine. But if you want to get a broad base, which you need in life, because most 20-year-olds I know have no idea about what their destiny lies ahead. And if you have a broad base to build on, you can always go back and specialize in this or that in order to get a job. Now, employers, I agree, should be interested in their bottom line, how much money they make at the end of the year. It has really nothing to do with how many degrees you have. It has to do with the input that the person brings to the company when they come in.
All right, we have about 30 seconds, Professor Murray.
We don't vehemently disagree at all in terms of what college can be valuable for. Our only disagreement is I don't want to resurrect vocational schools. I am saying that right now we have a huge proportion of young people who want to use college to learn a vocation. That's the reality, and the colleges are trying to serve that reality, but we put them into the straitjacket of the BA, which is outmoded for that purpose.
Thank you so much for being with us. Join us again. We have profound interest in this topic.
Well, I've enjoyed it, Kathleen. Thank you.
Thank you. Professor Charles Murray, scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, author most recently of Real Education, Four Simple Truths for Bringing America's Schools Back to Reality, and author of a piece in the New York Times, which you may want to look up, that prompted our conversation here about whether or not a four-year college is valuable and what we ought to do about testing people for jobs and preparing people for jobs. It's December 28th. Op-ed page of the New York Times. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, Rob Schroeder for on-air production, and thanks everybody for listening. We'll be with you tomorrow, New Year's Day, on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.